From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. Local students of color are speaking out about the challenges they say they face in suburban schools. They sat down with us on the talk show to share their concerns and to discuss a recent Democrat and Chronicle investigation about the disparities students of color face in suburban schools. That reporting revealed that, on average, minority students are more than a year behind their white counterparts academically, that they face higher out-of-school suspension rates, and that they say there is persistent racism on the part of students and adults in their schools.
In this clip, you'll hear two students discuss some of the reaction they heard from their peers after they were interviewed by the Democrat and Chronicle. Kennedy Jackson is a senior at Penfield High School, and up first is Kidane Malik, a senior at Grace Arcadia High School.
As far as attitude goes, by far the only negative reaction I got, which was strange, came from my fellow black students. This is interesting. It's not the first time I've experienced this, but it manifested itself in, hey, I see you in an advanced class. I see you on the paper, on the news, whatever, and I see you with this clean record. You are not a genuine black student. And that's so shaking. It's strange to encounter those words from someone you consider kin, whether that is family, because that has happened in my nuclear family unit, but also just friends or people I thought were friends, students, classmates. And I have to say, to them, so you're associating blackness, or you're associating your heritage and the pride that you have in your color with failure, with suspension, with disciplinary action. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, no, I'm proudly going to claim my African heritage, and I'm proudly going to claim being a black student and being successful and being advanced, and going through my time in high school, dabbling in all these things, being good at whatever I can, and having an attitude of success.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Kennedy. I am a successful person, and I am black. I don't have to be one or the other. I can be both. And I've done the Summer of Opportunity programs through the city, and I met other students who lived in the city who were of color. And going to Penfield my whole entire life, one of the biggest things that I would get when I would do these programs was, you're not black. Mm-hmm. You're white. You speak white. You, mm-hmm. like, and yes.
Why do you talk so funny?
Yes, and, like, I'm biracial, so I'm half black, half white. But, like, this is the way that I have been, like, raised. This is the only way that I have ever talked. So it's just, it's weird to me when I will meet people and that's one of the very first things that they will say. It's kind of like disheartening that that's seen to them as like one of the most important things about me.
Do you feel like you're navigating two different worlds? Do you feel like you have to be two different people in two different places?
Most definitely. Lately I've been reading a lot about other people and how like they code switch. Everyone code switches.
Mm-hmm.
And
all the time.
Yeah. No matter like, even just, like, the tiniest little things, like, you won't even realize. Like, going to Penfield, sometimes I have to, like, act like a complete and total different person than I am when I do the city programs, or even when I just, like, go onto the urban suburban bus to go home, mm-hmm. which is other people who also live in the city but go to Penfield. Like, there are so many different aspects of me that, like, I have to figure out how to mesh into one person to, like, in order to still keep who I am as a person but also, like, fit in at all these different places.
Next up, let's talk about sex. Turns out teenagers and young adults are having less of it. Research indicates they're having less sex than their parents and grandparents did, and there are a lot of reasons for this. We discussed them on the show with Dr. Pebble Kranz from the Rochester Center for Sexual Health.
Part of the trend includes an increase in the use of online pornography and an increase in masturbation. So let's go there. Dr. Kranz had a lot to say about this and whether it's a healthy trend.
At times, masturbation is a sexual outlet that can help with decreasing anxiety. It's reliable, good experience. And sometimes partnered sex is filled with anxiety and it doesn't feel so good. because of that worry about how it's going to go, particularly if there's some kind of concern about sexual function involved. And so, of course, like, you know, why wouldn't you want to do the thing that is relaxing and makes you feel safe and comfortable and get pleasure? And so I think it's important to realize that most human beings need a sexual outlet. And sometimes that's going to be masturbation, and masturbation often uses erotica or porn. So that's one thing. And another thing that I like to mention to people is it doesn't have to be an exclusive or binary relationship, that people can like porn as, let's say porn is pistachio ice cream and partnered sex is Cherry Garcia. You can like both pistachio and Cherry Garcia equally, or you could like Cherry Garcia a lot more but be willing to take pistachio from time to time, or vice versa. Good sex, a good sex life, really needs variation. And it needs a willingness to have a template for a sexual experience that's varied. So that's one thing. So
who says connections isn't interesting? We just got ice cream flavors to describe porn. So, but I think the point is well made. Also, as we continue on this theme, the article points to a lot of research indicating that masturbation is the one thing that has increased pretty significantly
right. In
our society among young adults, American adults, and among teenagers. So that is on the rise, which could be linked to a rise in the use of pornography. Probably?
I think that we're talking about masturbation more. We're admitting masturbation
okay,
more.
Okay, so you're more skeptical there?
I'm a little bit more skeptical,
okay.
Yes. But unfortunately, we don't have a lot of data to help us refine that. Is it a matter
okay,
of a
sure.
report? Because we can't go back to 1992 and really define, you know, what people were reporting.
All right.
That
so
time.
Before I turn to Daniel, let me just follow up on one important thread here, because you're talking about what can be a healthy use of pornography in a relationship that needs variety. And as you say, human beings are sexual creatures and probably need some form of variety. But if you have pistachio and Cherry Garcia in your freezer, is it a problem if you're not really enjoying Cherry Garcia much, but you're sneaking pistachio all the time and you're not telling anybody? Is that a problem? And you feel like you can't stop. Like every day you need the pistachio ice cream, but you're denying that you need the pistachio ice cream. This has gotten a little weird, but I mean, but really this is about addiction. And when does it become an addiction? When is it a problem?
So the whole question of whether we can be addicted to things like food and sex that are a normal part of human existence is fraught with complication. And also it's very culturally and socially weighted question. As far as the evidence that's available, the scientific evidence that's available, the jury is really still quite out on whether it's possible to be addicted to sex or addicted to pornography.
Next, the Netflix film Bird Box has generated a lot of buzz, and some of that buzz comes from advocates for mental health awareness who say the film perpetuates the stigma against mental illness. The psychological thriller tells the story of people living in a post-apocalyptic world, and they're driven to take their own lives if they see monsters. The only people protected from those creatures are people with mental illness who join the monsters in their mission. The film also includes gory depictions of multiple suicides, leading some mental health advocates to call for trigger warnings.
Our panel discussed their thoughts on the film and its treatment of mental illness. You'll hear from Adam Lubito, a film critic for City Newspaper, Sarah Passamonte from Compeer Rochester, but first, here's Christina Mosgraber from NAMI Rochester. That's the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
I did not watch it. When I even first heard about it, I was hesitant because I'm a suicide attempt survivor. A few years ago, I almost lost my life to suicide. So I'm very sensitive to language, to depictions of it, to especially when it's shown graphic on screen. I'm very stable now. I'm doing great. But even just sometimes seeing it or hearing wrong messaging can be triggering and difficult. So when Megan asked me if I'd seen it, I had, and I thought, oh, you know, I could probably handle it. And I asked a colleague of mine who knows my story and my history, and he told me just a little bit, and he says, I really don't recommend that you watch it. I really just don't think that's a good idea. And trusted my gut and trusted that. So that's why I haven't watched it, just for my own protection. That's a big goal, is to never re-traumatize myself if I can help it.
So. And so just as a service to people who may have experiences that relate to what Christina's talking about, my understanding is there's not a warning at the beginning of the film that's explicit in that way. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. And let me ask our guests who've seen the film, should there be? Are we talking about graphic suicide, gory suicide in this?
I would say, yeah, pretty graphic.
Absolutely.
Okay. Should there be a warning, Adam?
I think so. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot to, you know, toss up a quick, you know, title card and say something like that. So I think that's absolutely something they could have done.
Okay. What do you think?
Agreed. Absolutely. It wouldn't hurt anything and just gives people a chance to consider, you know, is this something I want to take in for entertainment purposes, and is it going to really serve that and not have a adverse effect?
Okay, that's a helpful note right off the top here. Christina, I don't know how often we do actually see warnings. Certainly, we see that in college classes when media is assigned to students, mm-hmm. to much debate in this country. But I don't know how often we see films in theaters carry these kind of warnings, or films on Netflix. Is it too much to ask? Do you think it's something that should change?
I definitely think it's something that should change. I think that, you know, like Adam said, you know, putting up a graphic card or an art card is not that difficult. Also, especially, or even, you know, I'd like to see a warning at the beginning, and I'd like to see something at the end. If you're struggling, if this has brought up difficult thoughts, here's the suicide prevention hotline. You know, we know that a big part of why people don't get help is they don't know where to go. And I think that even by giving people just those small resources, oh, they're big resources, but just small messages, goes a long way. You know, there was a movie that was in the theater recently that's wildly popular. And I was at the theater doing an event with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. People came out of the theater and they said, oh, are you here to support people who saw the film? And we're like, we were there for a different event. And there was a very graphic suicide at the end of this movie. And there were no trigger warnings. And people came out crying and thinking we were there for support. And it got us talking like, wow, we should be doing more. And especially letting people know before they go into it what they might be seeing.
I'll ask our guests who've seen the film if they liked it. Did you like it? Adam Lubito.
I was a little mixed on it. I mean, even from the movie side, I thought it, you know, is kind of familiar. It's a mix of a whole bunch of things you've seen before.
For example?
There's a little bit of The Mist in there. There's a little bit of The Happening, sort of apocalyptic world-ending catastrophes. And it sort of plays out in sort of the same sort of way. So I thought it was effective, but kind of familiar. And I also, taking into account, you know, its messaging, I thought it was kind of muddled. And I think that's part of the filmmaking that goes into it. I feel like there wasn't as much thought put into that side of it. And clearly, I feel like they want to say something about mental illness. And I think that's a failing of the film, that it's sort of muddled and unclear what exactly they're trying to say.
Sarah, did you feel like the film's trying to say something? Did it say something about that?
It wasn't really apparent until about halfway through the film that they were going to make note of anything to do with mental illness. It had that apocalyptic, almost, you know, more along the lines of a religious feel to it, even in the beginning. And then, you know, halfway through the movie, they're saying, well, everybody who is in a mental institution is out there just running amok. And that depiction is nothing new in the movies. I think that even TV seems to have done a better job at some of these, you know, putting things in after the fact. And here's a hotline at the very least. And so that was the point of the movie where I'm like, oh, they're doing this. They're gonna go there. Okay. But then we're up against so much with mental illness to begin with. So if you're going to have this, you know, suspenseful movie and you could tie in so many themes, I don't think that was necessary to the plot to throw in at all.
Finally, we discussed job ghosting this week. That's the practice of leaving your job without notifying your employer at all. You simply walk out one day and never turn back, never call, never email. Or you might get a job offer, but you don't respond to the offer at all.
In this clip, you'll hear Patrick Coyle describe why he's not surprised. He's a graduate assistant at SUNY Brockport. Then you'll hear Mary Macbeth, a branch manager for Imagine Staffing Technology.
The behavior of ghosting isn't the problem, it's the symptom of the problem. And that's that working conditions for the average person have not gotten better. They've gotten considerably worse. Is a good economy good for, you know, the average person? If you take your random person without a college degree is the economy that strong for them? You know, are they still just like stringing together multiple side hustles? It's inarguably a great economy if you're, you know, an upper middle class professional with a white collar job.
But that's not most Americans.
Yeah.
So for most Americans, is it a good economy?
In terms of social mobility and advancement, no, I wouldn't say. There's only so many times you can slap, you know, you can depress pay and look for as many ways as possible to give your employees less for doing the same work before they're going to, you know, you start looking for other gigs or think less of the employer as a whole.
Mary, you agree with them?
Not necessarily. I spent a great deal of time working for an outsourcing company, and a lot of the times when companies make the decision to outsource, it's pieces of their business that are not necessarily the most strategic. There's still the chance. So I don't know enough about Kodak's business, but I would assume that they still have ways available for their, you know, their entry-level positions for them to move through with the process.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm not disagreeing with that. It's just that, you know, 10 and 20 years ago, the people who mowed the lawns, the people who, you know, cleaned the bathrooms, the secretaries and the admins, you know, those were Kodak employees with full benefits. And now if you
Or just employees, generally speaking.
Yeah, like they weren't...
You picked one company, but really, across the
side, they were
more likely to have benefits, more likely to be full-time.
Yeah, and now, you know, if you look, all of those are usually temps or employed by an outside agency, so there's not the same opportunities for the same benefits and advancement.
And that's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections, the show, every weekday afternoon, Monday to Friday. That's weekdays. Redundant there. Noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS. Finger Lakes Public Radio, that's 89.5 FM.
We are also on the WXXI mobile app. He's Evan, I'm Megan. Have a great weekend, everyone, and we will talk to you Monday.